Hey everyone, this is Sydney Shute from Victory Condition Gaming, and you're listening to the Victory Condition Gaming Podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to Victory Condition Gaming. My name is Doug. Today on the show, I have one of my favorite designers on, game designers, one of my favorite people in general, Jonathan Ying. Jonathan, thanks for coming on and chatting with me again. You were just on, before we went live, I was just saying, you were just on the show like... it seems like only a few weeks ago, but it was probably a couple months ago now.
But, yeah, I think it was a bit, but yeah, like it's good to be back. I'm super excited to be.
Thanks for coming back. It's you're making some big waves right now in the whole board game arena, man. You're just like one big announcement after another.
And, yeah, things are pretty exciting. It's been a crazy few months.
It's great. Oh, it's man. Great. I'm wondering, do you ever sleep? Is pretty much my question.
Sundays.
Okay. That's good. That's good. At least you get one day to get some. You must sleep the whole day though to make up for the fact that.
That was a reference to a film I really like. Thank You for Smoking. I do my best to get some sleep, but yeah, there's so much to do, and it's. It's really exciting. Sure. Really losing out on playing Destiny 2, really. That's
nice. Yeah, that's a bummer.
It's fine. I'm having a good time.
It's good. It's good that you got priorities, though.
Yep.
So, I had to have you on because you have a Kickstarter on right now, and I'm going to tell everybody that's watching this either live or after the fact. If you're interested in this, in what we're talking about, I did put the link to Bargain Quest that is on Kickstarter right now in the description of this video. So please check that out. Click on it. It's going like gangbusters. It's awesome.
It's doing all right.
you must be just ecstatic. Like this. Let me just back up a little bit. Now this is for a second printing of this game. Mm-hmm. You had a Kickstarter for the first printing and for the game itself. Back, what was it, April 2017?
Yeah, something like that. April of last year. A little over a year ago, yeah.
And it's been sold out.
Mm-hmm. It's been out of print for a few months now.
It's come back. You're putting a Kickstarter out for a second printing, plus an expansion.
Yep, the expansion that we've had the expansion cooking for a while now. We've been pretty excited about it. We kind of were planning on sort of having like most of it done and trying to release it in a few months from now was the original plan. Okay. But after a few months back, the Shut Up and Sit Down video dropped and basically vented our entire stock of games. And since then, like, we've been getting a lot of messages, people asking, like, when's it coming back? People really want to play it. And so we worked really hard. We basically switched gears really heavily and focused on getting everything together, getting everything squared away for, like, a nice big second printing. And we want to... Sure. We want to really do it right. And like we've had the expansion ready. We were like, but will it be? We were always planning on doing the expansion alongside a second printing Kickstarter. Okay. That was kind of the initial plan. We just weren't expecting to need a second printing so soon, We were like, let's, wait till the game gets a little more momentum, gets a little more buzz. And then it happened all at once. And it was insane, really. Yeah. The Shut Up and Sit Down bump is real.
It is. They do. Top notch. They are pretty much what every board game content creator aspires to be. They are except for maybe Rodney. Rodney does really good videos too.
Yeah, I think Rodney's got his own niche that he fills incredibly well.
Yeah. So they're humorous. They're educational. It's just great content for Rush It Up mm-hmm. and Sit Down. Now your Kickstarter has 18 days left as of today.
Yep.
It had a funding goal of what, 30 grand?
30 grand was the initial goal, which was basically the bare minimum for like a reprint and like for a small, indie print run, right? Like for a little one. And then this is a little bigger than that.
Yeah. Yeah. You hit, I think as of this afternoon, you hit $151,000.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty funny, actually. The other, like, yesterday when we were at about 120K, we broke that. Someone in the comments was like, hey, congratulations on Bargain Quest being a 4X game. 4X funded, that is. Like, it was, and it's like, that was good. Very, very deep cut board game humor. I like it.
That's awesome. Hey, we have our own lingo, and that's awesome that they were able to do
it. It was good. Yeah, things are well.
Yeah, No, it's great. It's great. And the thing that I'd really like about this, about your game, and we'll talk about what it's all about here in a second, is that your sister's the artist for this game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Victoria, this art is amazing.
She's so good.
Oh, yeah. My word. Like, does she, what else? Have I seen her work on anything else? Like,
you almost certainly have.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about her. Because to be honest with you, I think board game artists in general are really undervalued in our, like, I mean, I know that there's a few that are really well known, but I think board game artists in general are undervalued in our industry and in our community. Like, let's give them more shout outs and more praise, because they're just awesome. And your sister's just phenomenal. So she's, I'm so sorry, good. I didn't mean to just interrupt you. I get going and
that's, yeah, cool, man.
But what else has she done?
I was super excited because my sister is did most of her work as a visual development artist. She previously has worked for a small, you know, film company called Disney. They did some stuff in the 90s, you know. Pretty big.
Are they even relevant anymore?
It's really unclear. she worked at Disney Feature Animation. She studied at Pasadena Center of Art Design and then went into be a visual development artist, which is the animation term for basically a concept artist, right? And she worked VizDev on Princess and the Frog was her first one, and then Tangled, Frozen, just little things, right? Like,
those are just little projects.
Yep, Wreck-It Ralph, Moana, Paper Man. She's basically been sort of on staff at Disney for a long time. She had spent a long time there, and she was really happy there. But eventually she kind of decided to try and move on and try and make her own way, kind of try and do her own stuff. Although she still, of course, carries with her a lot of that Disney house style in her aesthetic. Sure. They really, you know, they give you they code that really nice appeal values into you, right? Like, mm-hmm. The art, you know, for Bargain Quest in particular, we really wanted it to be really sort of generally appealing, right? We didn't want it to have that kind of hardcore, serious business fantasy stuff. We also didn't kind of want to go for even that slightly exaggerated but still fairly, modern World of Warcraft aesthetic that, like, you know, Fantasy right. Flight's Terranoth kind of shoots for.
Yeah.
We wanted it to be very, like, 2D animation, right? That was really what we focused on here. One of our big inspirations for Bargain Quest was the artist Sam Bosma.
Okay.
Sam Bosma is incredible. He does some awesome comics like Fantasy Sports. He's one of both my and my sister's favorite artists. And yeah, that was sort of when we were first working out this game, we were focusing on, like, what's the look we're shooting for? We want to, you know, and that was sort of one of our big tent poles was like Sam Bosma, a little bit of Miyazaki, a little bit of, you know, classic Disney, like, and, you know, with a big emphasis on, representation. Vicky's been, she's not traditionally, like, she's not in the board game art world, right? Like, I'm the only game she's illustrated, although she might do work for others now that notice is happening. Absolutely. She currently does a lot of work with children's books, actually.
Nice.
Which is I actually wrote one that she illustrated that we published with HarperCollins about a year ago, called Not Quite Black and White. I think two sequels came out for that one. And then she's got her own book, which she did entirely on her own, called Meow, which I really love. It's this really cute, like, kid's book about a little boy cat, and he's going around and kind of annoying his family, like his big sister and his mom. Wait a minute. it's kind of a joke, but yeah, she wrote a kid's book called Meow, and it's super cute and is doing quite well. But
my daughter would love that.
Yeah, she does a lot of illustrations for other kids' books too, as like a freelancer. But yeah, she's really enjoying kind of making her own way and doing her own stuff. And this was kind of, I had like just left Fantasy Flight when I had first started, you know, working on and building Bargain Quest, and she was not long out of Disney. And so both of us were like, hey, let's try and do something kind of independent, right? Let's see if we can make something, right? We've got the time now, right? Why not?
Sure.
Let's try it out. And basically that turned into Bargain Quest, and we could not be happier with how it shook out.
That's awesome. It's great. So let's tell us a little bit about what Bargain Quest is.
Right.
It hits a couple things that I really can relate to. And when you were on the show first, you mentioned it, and I kind of looked it up, and I was like, oh, hey, this looks pretty cool. This So once I saw you had a second printing, I reached out. I'm like, come on, Jonathan, you got to come on and talk about it because I want more people to get into it. And looks like there's a lot of other people that are into it as well. But
So we want more people. Yeah, so Bargain Quest. I'll give you the canned pitch we've been cooking over a long time.
Sure,
but basically,
sure.
Bargain Quest is a game where the players take the role of shopkeepers in an RPG town, right? You're not the adventurers. You're the people who live in town and run the item shops. You sell weapons. You sell equipment to heroes. And the thing about living in RPG towns like D&D or like Final Fantasy type worlds is that monsters like to attack these towns. And that's bad. Luckily, heroes have come to fight them, and they are in desperate need of weapons and armor, and they have just way too much money, just too much cash, and you, as the players, need to solve that problem for them. And the game is, mechanically, it's a drafting game with some other bells and whistles with a bit of a bidding mechanic. You start off by drafting item cards to your hand in like an open in a closed draft, kind of like Magic Gathering drafting. And you'll choose your equipment based on the heroes that are available, like which characters you want to equip stuff to. And then you'll choose some of those items in your hand to place in your display window. And those items determine what heroes you pull in. The items in your display are, the better the item in your display, the more likely it is that you'll get the hero that you want. But any items you put in your window are for display only and can't be sold. And so that's sort of the big... one of the bigger choices you have to make. It's like, do I put my best item in my window and sell something else, or do I hold it back, risk losing the hero I want, but be able to sell this for huge bucks? And once you equip your heroes, they go off and fight the monster. And if they succeed, then that's great. When the heroes do well, your shop gets stars, which are effectively fantasy Yelp ratings. And if they die, well, dead heroes can't ask for refunds, and new heroes come to replace them. Once the third monster is defeated, the game ends, and the player with the most money and stars wins the game. There's each of the heroes and each of the monsters have unique abilities, so different monsters will affect the town in different ways, and different heroes will interact with the shops differently. So, like, wizards like to barter and trade, so they'll let you draw cards when they come into your shop, whereas rogues will steal money from other shops to spend at yours. And there's a whole bunch of other kinds of heroes. There's a bard who everyone has to give money to because people need to support the arts. There's a nobleman who's incredibly rich but has very low stats. There's a huge variety of characters, and more as we expand the game with expansion packs and boosters and all those that stuff.
Absolutely, and that's one thing that I was really impressed with is the replayability of this because it doesn't look like any game. I mean, with the amount of heroes and monsters and everything, it looks like every game is going to be different. You know,
there are a lot of shifts depending on what the hero, how the heroes balance out. And it was an interesting balancing system as a designer because I realized I could actually, originally I was working very hard to make sure all of the heroes were exactly, you know, as strong as each other and they were all just as good, etc. But actually that was less interesting than if the heroes were a bit imbalanced and some heroes were just stronger than others and some heroes were like actually bad for you when they came to your shop, because part of the game is bidding on the, you know, items into the window to try and get the hero that you want. And so if it's, you're just as fine with getting any hero, then that's actually a less interesting decision. But if there's more risk to it, like there's a witch hunter who, when they come into your shop, forces you to discard any items with the wizard icon, like any magic items, because they hate magic. The witch hunter is really bad for some shops, so they'll actually change the way they play to avoid getting them. That was one of the more interesting angles of the design that really kind of freed me up to allow me to make a much bigger variety of heroes with more strange and interesting abilities. Just had to, so long, they could be stronger or weaker than others, so long as they weren't disproportionately balanced skewing. Like you don't want one hero to say live forever and then just never leave the game, because you want them to kind of rotate. You want new heroes to show up. And you don't want, like, say, if this player gets this hero twice in a row, they just win, right? But overall, it was kind of nice giving these heroes different abilities with different values and different qualities and seeing players interact with them in neat ways. And with Vicky's art on top of them, it was super cool because we would see like players become more and more attached to these heroes or get pissed at them. Like it was very funny. There's a one of the wizard cards is this like is one of the wizards is like a classic like old man wizard, but another one is this like little girl witch who is very cute.
Okay.
And you can see players like the when the old man wizard gets defeated, they're like, eh, you know, he had a good run, or they'll make a Gandalf joke or whatever.
Right.
But when the little girl wizard is like is defeated, everyone's like, oh no, what have you done? It's great. Yeah, but
nice.
I really enjoy the stories the players get to tell with the game. That's been super exciting in playtests and watching it in demos at conventions.
Nice. Now, how many players did you say? How many players this game supports?
So it plays. Oh, right. I should mention that. Yeah, it plays 2 to 6. The original Kickstarter only played 2 to 4, and it was actually kind of a lower priced product originally. We'd initially planned on it retailing at 35, but it moved up to 40 once we added the 2 additional players because it has player boards and components and all that for 2 more players, and the unique shop boards. Every player gets their own shop. And those are really elaborate. They're big folding player boards with gorgeous art. Vicky did a lot of environmental illustration at Disney, and not a lot of games actually lean into their environment art as much. It's a much bigger emphasis on character art. But you can tell a lot of stories and you can get a lot of character into environments. And so we have these very different shops. Like some are spooky, some are fancy. And they have no mechanical value. They're basically like, you know, picking your color, but, you know, more interesting.
Well, it kind of sets the mood a little bit too.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, I've seen players like where it's like, oh, our shop is kind of sketchy looking, so they actually behave in a sketchier fashion, even though there's no mechanical reason. It's good.
It speaks a lot to the art and how that conveys, you know, a feeling and an emotion. Let's talk a little bit about. What would you say? The thing that I really love about Bargain Quest is that it seems to be that great game that it has. I like to say it has like a great reach. Like it's great for like folks that are like new to the hobby, and then it's got enough meat on it that it keeps folks that are like really big into this hobby interested. So it's it has a really wide appeal. And that's what really kind of, I was like, oh man, this game really kind of hits a lot of cylinders. And I'm going to say if you've got like a great, if you're looking for a great family game, this would definitely be one to pick up.
Yeah, I think that was certainly something we were kind of aiming at. Like we wanted to pull in like a big part of the game's design and the game's aesthetic is very inclusive. And we want to bring more and more people into the gaming landscape. So we didn't want it to look like most other, you know, classic fantasy games, which usually have very cool aesthetics, but they tend to be grimmer, more like hardcore or whatever. But we also didn't want it to look too overly saccharine and too like anime or like there are certain aesthetics that might, you know, we wanted to try and make the aesthetic as appealing as possible to as broad an audience as possible. Yeah. Right. Yeah, there were a lot of decisions that went into that and a lot of sort of design choices that went into the look. Honestly, I thought I expected the game to be a little more gamer targeted with the audience that it would find. You know, the mechanics are a little bit, there's a fair number of exceptions to make how each of the heroes work and how each of the monsters work. There's a pretty significant amount of text in the game as well. But so like it's heavier than say something like Sushi Go or Seven Wonders, you know, like
they're like the entry level casual.
Right. Yeah. And so like, I was like, this is kind of the one step beyond entry level, but isn't like, you know, something like a Terra Mystica or something super heavy and hardcore. We're really aiming at that like $40 price point. Right. Which is kind of where the genre tends to sit. And yeah, like I was a little bit surprised when I was seeing like when running demos, we would see families come in and kids would pick up on it really quick and like really enjoy it and get super into the different characters and get super into the different mechanics. It was always funny when a family would show up because almost without question, when a kid would get the rogue, they would steal money from their dad.
Yep, that sounds about right.
Yep. And so, yeah, that was always very entertaining. And it was like either that or in any group of friends, right? They'd show up and I'd be like, all right. And then, you know, when the rogue comes to your shop, they'd steal money. Like, you wouldn't, you know, steal money from your friends or anything, would you? And they're like, oh no, he would. He absolutely would. And it's great. It's been fun.
Awesome. Now, this second printing, we've talked a little bit about the expansion. Tell us a little bit about the Black Market expansion that you're funding with this Kickstarter.
Yeah, so that's kind of going to be the big hook. We've added the large box expansion. Our first expansion came out with the original Kickstarter, and it was a pack of cards with a bunch of guest art for more heroes and employees.
Right.
This expansion is a bit bigger. It basically comes with kind of more of everything that's in the base game. You get two more shop boards, which are just kind of cool, nice looking. You get you get more item cards with some cool little things. But really the big sort of set piece of it is the Black Market upgrade. We've introduced a new mechanic that lets you actually modify your drafting hand. Yeah, playing with a couple of the Magic the Gathering played with this a bit in like their conspiracy set. The idea of here are cards that actually add to the game of the draft, right? Where you pick a card and pass the hand along. Mm-hmm. The way the Black Market expansion works is that when you buy this particular upgrade, it adds more cards to your opening drafting hand and lets you discard or even draft more cards from that hand from the get-go, which allows you to sort of tune the hand. So it's like, oh, I really want this card, but I also don't want my friend to get that card. So you can swap that card out for, say, something from the Black Market. Black Market cards are another element of the game. We have this deck of cards, which are the Black Market items. These are much more dramatic effects. Like, we didn't want to just have a whole bunch of new wacky items, because often it slows the game down for the regular players when they draft into a hand and it's like walls of text on each card and they're like, oh, what do these even do?
Sure.
The Black Market deck is designed so that it has a lot of the more complicated mechanics in it. It has more the cards have special effects or unusual abilities, or you know, interact a little differently. And by having it behind an upgrade that players can opt into, they can opt into these slightly more complex mechanics and stranger choices. And if they play it well, they can you can be very, very effective with the Black Market cards. But yeah, it's got it basically allows us to add in a variety of the sketchier items. Like, there's a couple of items in the base game that are kind of joke items. There's like a magic helmet with quotes, which does nothing but is worth a lot of money. So like, you just sell it to a hero and fleece them, and then they go off and get killed.
Sure.
There's a fake potion which does nothing, and if the hero lives, then it's fine. You just keep their money. But if they die, then they find out it was a fake potion, and you lose stars. So there's stuff like that. There's more of that stuff in the Black Market deck. There are items that grant penalties. There's one of the items is a forged will, where you get money if your character is killed.
Okay.
And stuff like, you know, a little bit of darker stuff gets involved in the Black Market.
Nice.
Which, is super fun. We've been testing it for a few months now, and I really like how it's going. We're still doing some tweaks on it. Like, we're not, it's not quite, it's good. It's already good, but we want to just kind of put it that last level of polish. So we're still testing it.
Now, as a game designer question. When you're designing a game and you're towards the end and you're kind of tweaking it, just kind of putting your finish type touches on it, how do you know when you're done? Like, how do you know when you're just like, okay, this is it?
So for most projects, it's basically when the deadline comes, right? You have to just make a call. There's an illustrator who I love named Evan Dom, who has a quote that I really like, which is, if I'd waited till I was ready, it would never be done.
Right.
I would never have published it. So like, you gotta make the call. I think Vicky told me like an old artist joke, which was, you need two people to make a great work of art. You need an artist to paint it, and you need someone to stop the artist before they ruin it.
Yes, that is totally me.
Yeah, exactly. So like, it's often easy to kind of get up, into your own head and completely forget, like, and lose sight of what you're trying to do with a lot of these expansions. And so a lot of the time, I just kind of I tweak them until like they're solid, and then like I want to have a minimum amount of testing that it needs, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, so I think this is pretty good. We're going to run through 10 games with it. And if it works at the end of those 10 games, it's good, you know. But if we still need to tweak it, then we might need to tweak it. But if there's not enough time for those 10 games, then, you know, you have to we make the call, right? We're like, okay, this was good, right? Could it be better? Maybe. Like, oh, we could do this. Do we have time to test that 10 times to make sure that it's better and doesn't introduce a new problem? No? Okay, then we're not doing it. I think that kind of discipline in design is something that, like, Fantasy Flight, while I was at Fantasy Flight, they really wanted to hammer into you because they're on very strict deadlines for a lot of their projects. And, yeah, sometimes that can lead to some things getting out there. And I think the biggest problem with board game design really is the fact that we don't have testers in the way that video game designers do, right? Yeah. Like, we can't just send a build to someone online and be like, hey, try this out. On the one hand, we can iterate faster. We don't have to wait for code to compile. We can just, like, Sharpie in a different mechanic onto a card and call it and try it out. But when it comes to actual, like, mass testing, right, like, there are things you just don't figure out immediately. There are things that just take time to that take a huge volume of players to figure out, particularly small balance things. Mm-hmm. Like, we, you know, we're testing Bargain Quest and its expansion as much as we can, but there are still things that kind of slip through, still things that aren't quite perfect, which is kind of one of the nice things about second printings, because we can't patch it normally. Right. But we are doing for the second printing an errata pack.
Yep.
For people who have the first people who got the first printing, we have an errata pack, which just introduces, I think, like 7 or 8 cards or that replace some cards in the base game. The base game still functions perfectly well, but there were a couple of things that I just wanted to tweak just a touch. Like, the bard has an issue where if the bard stays out for a little too long, he gets way too much money, and he becomes kind of meta warping, where it's just like, if you get the bard like 2 rounds later, you just win because he has so much cash. Which is, you know, a little too much. And then other mechanics, like there was a card that was a burglar who was just a little bit tough for players to parse. Like, it would come out and players would be like, I'm not sure what this card does. And it would take them a minute to read it. And they'd be like, I don't know. The new the burglar has been updated with a card called the Saboteur, which is a much simpler mechanical effect. Nice. And just kind of is much more readable and works much quicker, and leads to fewer questions, right? Requires fewer clarifications. Similarly, we've got like the Hired Thug, which has a clarified timing on it. Like, a lot of it is very minor rules text updates, but they're just quality of life changes for the game that I think are important.
Like, kind of make things run a little smoother.
Exactly. Yeah.
Nice. Nice. Mm-hmm. Now, I will tell folks that the base game, we'll just kind of touch on the price points for your pledges. If they want a copy of the second printing of Bargain Quest, it's a $40 pledge. Mm-hmm. And shipping is after the fact. Is that correct?
We're doing shipping through the pledge manager. Just kind of, it really lets us get a more accurate sense as to where the shipping is going to go when we have the shipping calculations done at that point. Because also a lot of people want to add in add-ons or order additional games, which will increase the weight of the package. And this just lets us make sure that what we are charging is the actual shipping cost and not like something that, because a lot of, you know, you can artificially inflate it and just be safe and say, hey, we're charging, you know, like initially we did, you know, the previous Kickstarter, we did $10 for local and $20 international. Which was fine because we didn't ship, you know, that many around. But $20 international, we also didn't cover import taxes. And so they had to pay import taxes, which increased this cost substantially for them, right?
Sure.
We have EU-friendly shipping this time. We have Australia-friendly shipping. We're doing much better on that front. But still on that front, like, every place has their own unique shipping requirements. And so it's like, hey, if you live in the U.S., it probably won't cost a full, you know, $10 to ship your game. It might only cost $8. Where if we had just kind of done a blanket cost, it would probably have had to have been, you know, a blanket slightly higher than expected cost across the board. This just seems much smoother and much simpler, and we're hoping it works out. You know, we'll see.
Yeah, no, I think it will.
Fingers crossed. Like, yeah, we're working with a larger distribution company this time, at, you know, as evidenced by the fact that we can offer friendlier shipping. All around, like, our fulfillment should be pretty smooth, is what we're hoping. Yeah,
nice. If folks want the game and the expansion, and what you've got, like a deluxe tier, it's what, $70?
Yeah, $70 deluxe tier has pretty much everything for the game, right? Like it's got an upgraded coin. It's got all of the expansions that we've ever made. It's got a bonus player board. It's got a whole bunch of cool stuff. And we've priced it pretty aggressively for the Kickstarter. And I think people seem to be really excited about it. It's certainly by far our biggest seller.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you've got, if folks just want the new items, then they can, and they've got the old, the original game, there's a $30 pledge that they can get that. And then you also have, and I love this, a retailer pledge for five copies, five expansions, five of the extra boards. And it's just for retailers.
Yep.
And, you know, they can come and support your game. Because is Bargain Quest, like, is, you're the only one that they carry, like, is that correct that you're the only one that you can only get it online from you guys?
Correct. We are the only, it is only available direct from us. We are, like, as we're moving higher and higher volume, we are actually considering looking into the big distribution network, like a big distributor. That is something we are considering, we are honestly considering at this point. For the previous run, we kind of sold direct. We were doing the Tim Powers model, as he does with, like, paperback and his games. And he does very well in that. But he does not ship enormous volume, right? It's kind of hard to get Tim Powers games outside of the U.S. He does offer, as we are, retailer shipping and all that. Although, depending on how things shake out, a few months from now, we may end up going with full distribution. So I'm not counting that out yet.
Sure. I think with the success that you've had, there's probably going to be, I think
we are getting offers, certainly. That is another thing. Yeah. There are distribution companies who come to us and been like, hey, so have you thought about, wholesaling it basically. But this way we actually get a chance to really, we have much more control over the pricing. Cause a lot of the times, like if you sell to a distributor, Amazon will undercut you pretty hard.
Right.
So it's like, oh, hey, it's up on Amazon, and they don't really have to pay warehousing fees as significantly because they have such big warehouses, and so they'll price it below most retailers, and then retailers have a difficult time moving it.
Sure.
We'll see. There's so many factors to this. The nice thing about Kickstarter and selling direct was that really we were able to pay our artists really well, like our guest artists for the expansion packs, and of course Vicky. Like, she put in so much work for this, and I kind of want to make sure that she sees that payment. It's one of the issues with artists in the board game scene is because board games don't make crazy money except for Magic the Gathering, right? It is they don't tend to get paid that well, and that's something that I think is slowly changing. And I'm glad for that, and I'd like to be part of that change and pay artists better.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, you've got one pack that's already been announced for the Table Titans pack.
Yep.
Like a Heroes pack. That's really awesome. And you've got two other ones that you're going to announce later on in the campaign.
We have two packs coming down the pipe. The next one's going to be announced next Monday.
Nice.
And then the last one's going to be announced the final week of the in the final week of the campaign. That's our current plan. And those are basically booster packs with more characters. And those are from licenses and some friends that we've made. Like, we're very close with the guys who run PvP Online and Table Titans. They're super cool. Like, Vicky actually designed a resin statue for them of one of their characters. We met them at a Comic-Con like in 2015 or something like that. But it's been super cool hanging out with them. And we both love RPGs and D&D, and they've been really close friends. Scott Kurtz, who does PvP Online, did one of the characters in the Chaotic Goods guest art pack way back when. And when we were working on the expansion and stuff, they're like, hey, you want to do like some, Table Titans content? I think that'd be super cool. And we were like, heck yeah. And so... we really like the idea of sort of bringing other worlds and other stories into kind of our little Bargain Quest, our game.
I love it.
And we're really excited about the other two packs that are coming down the pipe too, but...
I'm excited to see what they are.
One of them is going to be kind of a deep cut. I'm going to be surprised. I'll see how many of our people even remember this particular... brand or story that we're going to be announcing on Monday. Like, it's old. It's something that I really loved, like, back in the early 2000s.
That's not all that old.
On the internet, in internet terms, it's pretty old. It's certainly not something that is in the popular consciousness at the moment, unfortunately.
Well, that makes me... When you refer to things as the early 2000s as old, that makes me feel very, very old, my friend.
Oh, I mean, dude, you and me, we are decrepit at this point. we remember dial-up, like kids these days.
I remember AOL. Man, yeah, yeah. I still miss that little, like the three little windows that would,
noise that it would make.
Yep.
Yep. Oh, man.
Oh, man, that's so funny.
Not being able to make a phone call while you're on the internet.
Yeah.
I love that.
I remember that. That was great. And my mom yelling down, get off the internet, get off AOL.
Yeah, we need to call for pizza. And I'm like, that's right. Fine.
Little Caesars was my mom's. Like, they actually knew my mom by her voice at Little Caesars. That's how much she used to call that place.
Hey, okay, that's great.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. So, the old days.
The
right?
old days, yeah.
Yeah. Now we have Postmates.
Oh, Jonathan. Let's my final question to you for Bargain Quest is, and this is the one that I told you that I was going to ask you before we came on.
Yeah.
Now, your first Kickstarter raised, I think it was like a little over 54. It was like almost $55,000.
Yeah,
which is great. Great. You know, and I'm not
a success, right?
It's great. This second printing has just gone gangbusters. You're almost three times that, and you're only like halfway through. I don't even think you're halfway through your campaign. What do you think? And I know we mentioned Shut Up and Sit Down a little bit, but what do you think also contributed to this huge success for this second printing?
So I think, it was certainly a combined number of factors, right? Like the biggest one is almost certainly the Shut Up and Sit Down review, which vented our stock in the first place. Since then, like more and more people have seen it and more people have gone to our website and found like, oh, this is not available yet. And then they could sign up for our newsletter and be alerted when it came out. We got some good press on, Reddit. We got some decent reviews coming down the pipe, like Board Game Geek. It's rated at 7.4, which is pretty good.
That's very good. Yeah.
And I think just that combined with the scarcity of like it not being around for a while and people getting excited and like kind of wanting it but not being able to find it has certainly really helped a lot with our buildup of hype. Mm-hmm. I think now that because it is a second Kickstarter, like I think those always tend to do better than your first printings.
Right.
Which is true of like, everything from like Gloomhaven, Vast and all those.
Absolutely.
I think that helped a lot too. But overall, like I think, it's a pretty strong game with a gorgeous art aesthetic.
Yep.
That people know can exist and has existed, which helps a lot of people with that initial Kickstarter get over that hump of like, maybe.
Right.
And I think we got a huge amount of buzz at conventions, which was also good. I think we were at Penny Arcade Expo, we went to PAX Unplugged, we went to PAX South, we went to South by Southwest, and every time we took out the game, more and more people saw it and more people got excited about it. And I think just that, like, we sort of took this hype from every angle that we could. I think it's certainly paying off.
That's awesome.
We just got the Projects We Love badge from Kickstarter, which I'm sure is giving us a boost as well. I think certainly I think it's helping that we aren't simultaneous with a CMON campaign, right?
That kind of helps sometimes.
Those tend to eat other people's lunch when those hit.
Yeah. No, I think I always like to when people are doing Kickstarters right and they do and they have a good track record and good success and really good success on that platform, I always like to get their insight because, I know that there's folks that are interested in Kickstarters and that want to do their own thing on Kickstarter. And so I always try to, hey, what do you think you're doing right that really kind of connects with everybody? I figured that was a really good and important question to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I told you it was going to be an hour. A half hour. We're at 40 minutes. So I think I was gonna ask you a little bit about this other game you got coming out that you made, but I know that there's been in my Discord chat there's a little bit of buzz about this really well-known IP board game that that you just had announced at Gen Con that everybody's dying to hear more about. So I'll have to have you back on, and you can talk about the Power Rangers board game at some point. How about that?
Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. Yeah, totally.
Do we have a street date for that game?
I think the Kickstarter is launching very soon. I think it might even be launching next week.
Oh, it is a Kickstarter.
Yeah, we're launching it on Kickstarter. Partly just like, well, I think a big part of it, I'm working with Renegade Games on this one, so I'm not, you know, I'm not going to be the direct interface for it. I just get to kind of sit back and, you know, be anxious as to whether it goes well or not.
Oh, it's going to go great, Jonathan. You know this.
Hey, fingers crossed. I'm super excited about it. It was, Power Rangers is very close to me in my youth. But yeah, hey, I mean, I'll talk about it more in the future, but that is, it is certainly one of my favorite designs I've made in like since Bargain Quest. Absolutely. I'm really proud of how that game came out and how it's shaking out. And hey, we got Boom Studios, Dan Mora art, and speaking of good art, Dan Mora is amazing.
Sure.
He does the Go-Go Power Rangers comics right now. And I can't wait to talk about that more with you.
All right, well, we'll have to have you back on. I'm going to tell you right now that I am not a big Power Rangers guy, because that came on after, that was kind of like after my time, or before, yeah, that was kind of after my time. So, but once I saw that you were the designer on it, I'm just going to give you some more compliments. I'm like, okay, I got to get this game, because I'm sure it's going to be just phenomenal. So, and I've got friends that would want to play it with me anyway. So I'm excited to see that your name was on it. So we're going to have you back on to chat about it, but I won't keep you any longer, because I know you've got much more game design to do.
Oh boy. Yeah. You can see some of the detritus of it on my desk back here.
Maybe I should zoom in and try to see if I can.
Yeah. Enhance, right? Like,
that's right.
We make sure to blow it out with these giant windows back here.
No.
Yeah, cool, man. It was good. Thanks for
coming on. Good luck with the rest of the campaign, everybody. If you back Bargain Quest on Kickstarter, let me know in the comments. I've played Bargain Quest and love it. Let me know as well. We'll have to have Jonathan on again and chat about all the other games that he's just a busy guy, and I could probably have him on every single month at this point, because he's just putting out product after product and awesome game after awesome game. So, Jonathan, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with me. This has been Victory Condition Gaming, because winning shouldn't be the only victory condition when you get to the table. We'll see you next time.
Cheers.